Well, he's kept us waiting for more than a decade, but writer Robert Sullivan has just published a new poetry collection in which he examines both his Māori and Pākehā whakapapa. The poems in Tūnui Komet are deeply personal. They encompass the distant past through to the future, while Te Reo and English stand confidently together in some of the poems. First, Robert, who's currently teaching at Waitaki Boys High School in Oamaru, reads one of the poems from the collection, and it's a true story.
Hello, Great North Rose, my old friend. I wonder how far north you travel. The road goes west, starting two doors up from the dog's bollocks, ending at sunset. So many sunsets, Facebook and Instagram couldn't contain them. So many yellow lines, white stripes, there's hardly a valiant left to defy them. Now the years overtake us. Visits as a boy to Uncle Bruce and Auntie Lindy in their K Road council flat led me to the greatness of the Great North whipping its dusty tail up to the skyline of Reinga. Yet why do I see your darkness as silence, my friend? You're a sleek black eel pumping blood all the way to Karikari, to Muriwai, to Bethel, to Piha, and our vehicle surfed the surges back to K Road. Back and forth, LOL, rocking up our shock absorbers and surfboards. Keep bringing the waves, Great North Road. Keep saving the whales. Keep the Toheroas shining, tucked away from spades and sandy bolt holes. Smile in your cars and honk, honk, honk on the Great North Road. This collection somehow returns to the theme of whakapapa and connection through whakapapa. I could argue that almost through every poem there's some kind of journey, some kind of travel, or some kind of direct yearning for family connection in each poem in this collection, even though you say it's been over 10 years since I've started writing some of the poems in this.
It's dedicated to your mum, and we meet aunties and forebears. I mean, when you're talking whakapapa, it's extended whakapapa very much, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. On both sides of my family tree, my dad's side, my mum's side, Pākehā, Māori, Irish, it's all in there. And that's been a theme song of all my work, that I try and present a complex picture of what it is to be an urbanised Māori person in this century, whichever century that is. I've forgotten there's so many.
I do tend to look for the title poems in a collection. Sometimes it's at the front and sometimes at the end. And Komet, we find at the end of your collection. And it feels, in a way, like a summary. You're mentioning your nannies and your heritage, sunrises, the elements you talk about a great deal, the tūpuna you talk about a great deal in the earth. But it's a beautiful poem.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that title poem is really referencing my tūpuna Papahuri here. He founded the first prophetic movement for Māori after contact. He's based in the Hokianga. And the image of the comet is special to Ngāpuhi. It was one of his visions, one of the signs of our iwi. But I wanted to reference a kind of sovereign power, a kind of power that's greater than anyone, but also wanted to reference a kind of light. For a long time, this collection was called Long Light. And then I realised that, well, a comet is a form of long light. And I like to think that my ancestor, Papahuri here, is lighting up the poetry in the collection.
Colonisation, decolonisation, you explore in the collection. I've got in front of me where you've... It's just a line that stayed with me. With Cook's new things, we built spacious homes. You know, and further down, we learnt to see with spectacles. Did you write that with sadness, with frustration, maybe celebrating the fact that early Māori were quick to take advantage of things? What's your view on it?
I wrote that with love. I think, the story of early Māori and Pākehā contact was in, at least in part, a love story. Like, I have tūpuna before the treaty, the Pākehā. And that's clearly a love story. And I think sometimes in our politics we overlook that sort of stuff. But I wanted there to be a complexity of engagement, not just a simple kind of sort of a nonsense to say this, the treaty is simple, or Te Tiriti is simple, but not to just boil it down to Māori and Pākehā, you know, Crown on the Pākehā side, non-Māori side, and tangata tiriti on the tangata whenua side. There's more to us than that, more than a binary kind of relationship. I like to think that my poetry gets beyond stereotypes too, that to be a Māori person encompasses so many different things. There's so much complexity in the world, just like for every person. And so I'm trying to present that kind of complexity in the poetry.
Cook gets mentioned also in your series of poems, Te Whitianga a Kupe. You're covering, you know, a lot of time in here and a lot of thoughts. It's a substantial body of work, actually. Were these poems that you wrote in order? Were they works that you've come back to over time?
I like shuffling the order. I learned that trick when I was writing Star Waka, that I could be a time lord. So I like sci-fi, so I like folding time. I always have.
You write about writing in te reo English and also wanting to write in te reo Māori. This poem I find really quite beautiful. It blends and it merges these two languages that you speak, but you don't want to perpetuate a cycle of disuse, but you do want non-speakers to be able to read your poetry. It's a dilemma.
Yeah, that's right. I use that word dilemma in the poem. But also for me, my te reo Māori is just, it's not at the same poetic level as my te reo English, you know. So there's also that dilemma. Like I struggle with the few Māori poems that are in the collection. I really worked and I got tons of advice. And, you know, I'm sure there might be the odd grammatical error in there still, and it's not anyone's fault, it's my own. But I really wanted to say it in Māori, because there are things that you just cannot say in English that can only be said in Māori. You know, that lost in translation thing that so often happens. And that lost in translation is where culture lives too. You know, it's not just a linguistic exercise, it's a way of being. And to be Māori has so many ethereal aspects to it, not just, you know, the way we dress or talk or even move around. Culture does so much more than that. And so I feel like if I want to write about being a complex person who happens to be Māori, I have to somehow reach out with my, you know, quite rudimentary skill set in the language to write in te reo Māori as well.
I'm a genealogist, so I'm sure there's no surprise for you, Robert, that one of the poems I particularly love, Whakorongo Mai, you went searching in for your Sullivan Tupuna. What did you find?
Well, I'm not the only one who's been searching. Like, I've got a great uncle who passed away. He was really an enthusiast for our family tree. So he did heaps of research. And for a while there, we thought that perhaps the Sullivan was some kind of whaler based in Nantucket. So we thought there might have been an American connection. And then we found a Sullivan through a change of land deed title who was based at Maitupuna Pōmari's pā. Back in the 1830s, so he was a potter, this other Sullivan. You know, it's going to be a never-ending search for this first Sullivan, even though we've got a really good handle on the Māori side of that Sullivan connection, the Harawinis, who were actually from further down the east coast, and then moved up to Ngāti Manu, Karatu, where my mother's village is. So, yeah, it's quite a long hikoi, that whakapapa journey between different parts of the island.
Many of your poems you write in first person, and we tend to assume that this is your story, those poems we've just been talking about. Then I came to I wasn't a poet for writing place names, and as I get through it, this feels very much like, I'm not sure it's an image you saw or where this came from, but this poem also written very clearly in first person.
Yeah, I use a lot of personae. When I first started writing with my first collection, that was quite raw. That was quite a lyric voice of me, but I learned that to write like that can be quite emotionally draining because you're sharing so much of your inner self in public sometimes in the reading. But there always is something of me in each poem. I am still a lyric poet, but there's also, I think because of this whakapapa connection, a more collective kind of aspect to my poetry, so it's not an individual lyric voice, more of a collective lyrical voice. Perhaps subconsciously is aimed for another, you know, I've only just realised this talking to you, Lynn.
With Old Government House, again, first person, I want to wrap Old Government House in lover lovers and fine feather cloaks and in tartans. Does that come from your heart?
Yeah, that one does, because I've got an ancestral connection with Governor Wynyard. You know, we come off his son, Hori Wynyana, or George Wynyard. So the collective voice is still there, but it's ancestral. And, you know, because of COVID, I haven't done many poetry readings recently, but I was wondering how I'd read that one out loud, you know, because it's Old Government House, and then there's the acronym OGH, and I was wondering if I'd say OGH, or would I end up saying OG? I think I would. I'd go to the OG rather than the OGH. I don't know. About the mystery of that place, so you know how power is kind of ethereal. You can't put a finger on it, but it somehow rests in certain sites. And an Old Government House is one of those old sites for colonial power.
Robert Sullivan, and Tūnui Comet is published by Auckland University Press.